This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We are living at the intersection of two major health crises, the COVID-19 pandemic and diabetes, which San Antonio has one of the highest rates in the nation. Diabetes and any virus is a bad combination, but COVID-19 is proving to be especially awful. The pandemic response is making it harder for people to manage their diabetes. And then the double whammy of becoming infected, COVID hits a diabetic especially hard. So today's takeaway, I would like to highlight that if you are diabetic or you suspect that you might be diabetic because so many people are undiagnosed, I want you to take COVID very seriously. And I do want to hear about your experiences about being diabetic during the pandemic. How hard has it been for you to manage your diabetes? Gyms, not a great place to be. They were closed for a long time. They've reopened, still not a great place to go if you want to avoid COVID. We've been stress eating like crazy. All sorts of behavior changes have happened. How are you doing with your diabetes during the pandemic? Has it made it managing your diabetes all the more harder? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We also would like to hear about how your family is doing, if you have someone in your family who is diabetic and caught the COVID, and how did that work out? These stories, they mean a lot, and they really help the community learn how we can manage through this pandemic. So you can tweet that at us at The Source, email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at tprsource. And that call-in number, 833-877-8255, you could also text us at that number as well. We're joined this afternoon by Dr. Alberto Chavez Velasquez, endocrinologist with the University Health Texas Diabetes Institute. And Dr. Chavez, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us this afternoon, we're joined by Golare Aga, PhD, chronic disease epidemiologist and chief of informatics for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. And Golare, welcome to The Source.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you.
So, Golare, tell me about what you are seeing. You're looking at the data at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. We have two sets of data, COVID, diabetes. You put them both together. What do you see?
Sure. So we are very closely looking at the data on diabetes and COVID since the pandemic began. What's really disheartening, and we've seen time and time again in our monthly epidemiological reports, is that consistently at least 50% of those with COVID who end up in the hospital have diabetes as an underlying condition. So that's really one in two people. We've seen it time and time again as the COVID responses data unit does the epidemiological report. So again, that's a pretty high number. And besides heart disease and hypertension, diabetes is up there as the most common underlying condition amongst those COVID-19 infected patients that are hospitalized.
Dr. Chavez, when you hear that data set, what does that tell you?
Yeah, this definitely is consistent with what we've seen all along since the pandemic started. Our diabetic population is being especially affected by this condition. And I just wanted to add the fact that hypertension and cardiovascular disease are also highly represented in the patient affected by COVID-19. It's a reflection that these people, they have like the same common background. So diabetes is highly prevalent in patients with hypertension and vice versa. And also diabetes is a very important risk factor to develop cardiovascular disease. So if we go by the numbers, I mean, I'm not surprised to see those numbers. They definitely are consistent with what we see day to day.
So Dr. Chavez, this week, we're covering diabetes all week. We think this is a very important story for San Antonio, and we're trying to break through the noise saying, yeah, we got to deal with this. But one factoid that we've been hammering again and again is that San Antonio's diabetes rate is 15.5%, one of the highest in the nation, if not the highest for a major city in the nation. Given that fact that San Antonio has such a high diabetes rate and that COVID-19 is something that makes diabetes is a bad, almost fatal combination, does that really kind of tell us that San Antonio really needs to take efforts to slow the spread of COVID all the more seriously?
Absolutely, yes. I think we are in a particularly difficult situation here with the high prevalence of diabetes, but even more, I think the real problem here is that there's like a huge part of the population that is not even being diagnosed with diabetes yet. And that's when we're seeing the cases of people who are making the transition from a pre-diabetic to the diabetes state, and COVID is frequently the factor that actually triggers this transition.
And Golareaga, looking at the numbers for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, the people who have diabetes in San Antonio, what does it look like with their access to healthcare? Do they typically, or what's it look like with their health insurance access?
Again, in one of our major diabetes report that we have now up on the website, we do a lot of correlation analyses to look at, you know, the relationship between access to healthcare and outcomes that need a lot of healthcare, such as diabetes. And unfortunately, health insurance status in San Antonio is also very low. A research done by the Asthma and Allergy Foundation found that out of 100 top cities, San Antonio, I think, ranked 7th. In the highest proportion of uninsured. So when you think about access to a lot of, you know, medication and diabetes management, that health insurance and access to health insurance is really important. So it does play a large role. And unfortunately, San Antonio is, you know, pretty low on the bar for that as well.
And it seems like that can't be stressed enough. I'd like to get a response from Dr. Chavez about access to healthcare, particularly now in a pandemic.
Yes, so access to healthcare has been one of the main determinants of outcomes in this pandemic, and it's a main determinant of outcomes for many, many conditions, not only diabetes. So it is something that has affected the way patients get access to treatment. There is a large proportion of patients out there who have diabetes and unfortunately do not have the means and the access to get proper care. So these patients are particularly vulnerable to the effects of the disease.
But when you say these patients, we know that this is a group that is going to be typically lower income and typically parts of our communities of color, Dr. Chavez?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. We've seen, and based on the data is being shared. Yes, the Latino population and the African American population has been particularly affected by these combination of factors. Yeah.
Anything you want to add to that, Golare?
Yeah, I think it's really important, and that Dr. Alberto mentioned, health insurance coverage is especially important for diabetics because we need regular checkups, lab studies, prescription medication, and there is actually evidence that diabetics without health insurance had 60% fewer physician office visits and were prescribed 52% fewer medication than people with insurance coverage. So it's really important to think about the specialty care that you need when you have diabetes to manage, and how that makes it even that much more important to have, you know, proper health insurance for that.
So one could make a case that we're actually in the middle of three different health crises. One of them is diabetes, the other one is COVID, and the other one is the lack of access to health care. We're going to talk more about diabetes and COVID when we come back from the break. We do want to hear from y'all folks out there. How's it been going with you? What have you seen with you and your family and people around you? The number is 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We continue Diabetes Week, and we're looking at the overlap between diabetes and COVID-19. This is a deadly combination. This is why we have to take COVID-19 very seriously in San Antonio. And we have a caller. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Jody. And Jody, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to let you know, my mom was diabetic and I was pre-diabetic. My mother caught COVID at the end of December and passed away in January. And I believe wholeheartedly that it was her diabetes that made her unable to fight the disease. I went through a period of grief where I was stressed and grief eating, but I realized what I was doing to myself and was able to turn around. But it was really hard in San Antonio, not only because of, you know, are the lifestyles that we live here because of the gym closures and the people in the gyms being unsafe without masks. So I had to really figure out a way to exercise on my own. I was able to turn my pre-diabetes around, but, you know, if it wasn't for the death of my mother, I don't think I would have taken it as seriously.
Jody, thank you so much for the call. We have a lot to learn from what you just told us. That's an important story, and I'm really sorry about your mom. So Golaray Aga, PhD at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, Chief of Informatics. This story that we heard from Jody, I bet there's a lot of people out there just like that.
Absolutely. I think we have to think about, you know, the ripple effects of the pandemic and how it's caused a lot of disruption in our lifestyle. As has been mentioned before, I think in the previous sessions, we can think about, you know, the sedentary behavior that we have to engage in more as we were, you know, locked down or we didn't have access to places because of the mask mandate. This is particularly important for kids if they were home from school, not able to get as much physical activity as they usually did. We're eating a lot more. We're sitting in front of the TV a lot more as we're passing the time. And I think that story that we just heard is really heartwarming, that we have to try to find innovative ways to really get around the fact that the pandemic has really, you know, stalled our lifestyle. For example, getting outside and exercising, enjoying all of the great parks that we have here, engaging in hiking in the months where the heat isn't too aggressive. So absolutely, it's important for us to think about, you know, the double whammy of all the different effects of the pandemic in our efforts to try and stay healthy, which is, it's made it harder.
Right. So we hear time and time again that you have to manage your diabetes through healthy eating, healthy lifestyle, exercising, like you just told us, Golaray Aga. But Dr. Chavez, that can be very difficult during times of stress, and people will make bad decisions during times of stress, and they may eat too much, drink too much, and diabetes, it's not a forgiving disease. Once you engage and indulge, you're doing almost irreversible damage to yourself, aren't you?
Yes, exactly. So, and this is exactly what we see from the beginning. You know, these type of behaviors that unfortunately are the result of the massive amount of stress that patients were going through. And so stress eating, lack of physical activity, more sedentary behaviors, all the changes in the family dynamics, you know, being more people at home. And also, you know, there were some less at some point people were struggling with access to the healthier options. You know, supply chains were disrupted. So this was a particularly time of changes for patients with diabetes. And we see it in the clinic during the follow-ups. Many patients who were usually well controlled, they started to see changes in her glucose levels, and this can be particularly stressful for them. And weight gain is an important finding that we see in patients during the pandemic, and people who had the risk factors for diabetes just progressing into a full blown disease. So this is something that we see regularly.
Dr. Chavez, if a person, a diabetic, are they more likely to get COVID-19?
It is not completely well established whether they are at a higher risk of contracting the disease. However, what is very clear is if they contract the disease, they are definitely at a higher risk of developing the severe form of the disease. You know, this is the life-threatening form of the disease, which is associated with a severe pneumonia, more likely to be hospitalized, more likely to be in the ICU, more likely to be intubated, and of course, a higher likelihood of death.
And Golaray Aga, looking at the data tables at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, I don't know, is it true to assume that people who are diabetic, you know, we look at, you know, generalities and numbers, are they likely to be part of our essential worker group?
I don't think we have data as particular as that yet, but obviously we know that diabetes rates differ by racial ethnic status. You know, we do see racial ethnic disparities and as well as educational disparities. And unfortunately, those, you know, who have occupations that are in places where you're more likely to be exposed to COVID could be the populations that are also exposed and more likely to have the risk factor and develop diabetes as well. So, you know, we're talking about jobs where you can't necessarily remotely work, people who don't have transportation, who then have to take public transportation. There is, you know, some evidence that those who, you know, have occupational and educational settings that are at, you know, at a lower level are more likely to, you know, be able to be exposed to the virus in those settings because they can't work away from home or they have to rely on public transportation.
And so this puts them more at risk.
Yes. I mean, it's always been said, there's been a lot of great pieces that, you know, a viral infection is a great equalizer. Everybody is equally at risk of, you know, getting a virus. But in reality, there are certain populations in the lifestyles that they have, in the ways in which they have to work and live, where they may have greater risk of being exposed to the infection, as opposed to the luxury of someone, you know, with a six-figure salary who is easily able to work from home and transport in their own car. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm able because, you know, certain people have a stronger bubble than others.
And exactly.
So, all right, let me go to a caller, and the number is 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Shannon. Hey, Shannon, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I wanted to just touch on a comment that the doctor recently made about diabetics being at an increased risk for more severe disease. And I'm a local kidney care nurse. And so one of the things, and I'm pleading with my diabetics to get vaccinated. We know that there's some concern about variants and all that stuff, but there's still benefit. One of the things that we're seeing in kidney care is a significant increased risk of renal failure to the point to where we're short on supplies. And we're running out of equipment and nurses to manage these clients, which again has detrimental effects. And is this renal failure? It can be for life. And so you have to have dialysis or a transplant to survive. And so I'm pleading with you, if you're diabetic, you're already at an increased risk for renal failure, COVID-19. It's just icing on the cake. Get vaccinated.
Shannon, thank you for that great call. I appreciate that great information. Dr. Chavez, like to add to that?
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, it's this very, very true statement. And patients who get very sick into the hospital with COVID, particularly people with diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, they are developing renal failure at a very high rate. You know, it's not only that they get severe pneumonia, these patients are getting more heart disease, they are getting more kidney failure, and kidney failure will many times result into the need for dialysis. And of course, this puts more stress into an already stressed, you know, healthcare system, trying to care for people who are acutely ill. And then there is the need for extra resources, you know, to care for patients that need a much higher level of care.
So absolutely. Dialysis, that's when you can't do dialysis through Zoom. You have to go to a location and you're being treated and it can be a complicated, it's routine, but it's also complicated. Does COVID make that, has that made that more complicated, Dr. Chavez?
Yes, particularly for severe cases, COVID has made follow-up visits more difficult. So as hospitals and clinics are dealing with the high amount of cases, and of course there's a lot of people that need to be seen for regular follow-up visits. And of course, many healthcare systems, they made a tremendous effort to transition to a telemedicine care for those patients who are at a lower risk and can be managed. But when the patient is acutely ill and when the medical condition is progressing rapidly, so definitely there's no telehealth here. You know, it has to be in person.
Yeah, frequently when I drive across Texas, I go into these small towns and they'll have a Sonic and a grocery store and a dialysis center. Those are the three things that these communities always have these days. Golare Aga, do we know how many people in San Antonio are dependent on dialysis?
I don't have that data exactly. We do have data on kidney disease being a very high sort of risk for mortality. And we actually, in one of our latest reports, found that mortality due to kidney disease, you know, which diabetes is a major risk factor for, has actually increased over time. We do, however, have a lot of data on other complications like diabetic amputation. And what I really want to stress, David, is that in San Antonio and Bexar County, there's consistently has a much higher rate of hospitalization for diabetic amputations compared to Texas overall. So when we think about, you know, stressing an already stressed healthcare system, we have to take this in mind. Diabetes hospitalization rates in San Antonio, Bexar County are consistently year after year higher than for Texas overall, and same for hospitalization for diabetes amputations. So complications are, yes, high and many.
Okay, let's go to the phones with Taylor. And Taylor, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me, and thank you guys for being on the air. I would definitely have to reiterate the importance of stressing the complications related to diabetes. I mean, it wreaks havoc on your heart, your vasculature, your kidneys. So I think diabetics, they definitely hear a lot of this, but I think we also need to address the cultural implications of the people that we have here. I mean, if you're thinking about a lot of Hispanics and the types of foods that they're eating, you know, as a physician, you should also talk about what are some alterations to maybe some of these recipes we can kind of improve. I mean, because not everybody's going to change their diet overnight. It's not, you know, something that's going to do a complete 180. So really working with patients on that, I think, is a very, very important topic to discuss. And especially with the reports that have come out in the last couple of years about, you know, the increased risk, or excuse me, the increased rates of below the knee or amputations on the south side of San Antonio. That's definitely something that we need to address, is, you know, cultural implications of rates of diabetics.
Taylor, thank you for the call. Also, tomorrow we're going to be spending the hour talking about nutrition and eating for diabetics and how to manage your diabetes with your diet. But Golare Aga, you know, San Antonio, particularly in like the south side of San Antonio, do we see numbers there that really are shocking?
Absolutely. We map a lot of our rates and prevalences and hospitalization rates by zip code. And what we consistently see, and again, this is again in our diabetes report that was put together by our resident registered dietitian and informatics expert, Dr. Maciel Ugalde, we do see higher rates across the board in the southern regions of Bexar County. So that's definitely a case that we see consistently when we map these rates by zip code. And I really want to emphasize what the caller said is incredibly important. Cultural components are a really big part of this. And when I said something about the diabetic amputation rate, I want to emphasize that Hispanic Latino males have a particularly really high rates of diabetic amputation. So when we think about a target population, the Hispanic Latinos across the board have a higher amputation rate than the other race ethnicity groups, and particularly Hispanic Latino males.
All right, we're taking another break, and we'll come back. We'll continue discussing diabetes, particularly type 2 diabetes here in San Antonio, a very high rate, and what's happening with COVID-19. We do know that people with diabetes have a higher chance of serious complications from COVID-19. Why is that? What does that look like? And what are the risk factors for people who have diabetes with COVID-19? What can be done to try to manage that? If you have a question, call in. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear about your stories. How has this impacted you and your family? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about diabetes and COVID-19. Now, if you have diabetes, you think you might have diabetes, you want more information, you could go to a website. It's from the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, diabeteshelpsa.com. There's information there about virtual workshops and other local resources that can help you manage your diabetes. Again, that web address is diabeteshelpsa.com. I have a text message from Mike. I'm a type 2 diabetic. I had COVID in January and was severely sick to the point of intubation, but opted out. I still have issues. I'm also a healthcare worker in the ER and ICU. I can tell you that patients don't take this seriously, or they still believe that COVID is not real and that vaccines are not helpful. As a culture, our healthy lifestyle is difficult, and not just because of stress, but because people don't know how. If you've got a question or a comment, just like Mike, you can text us. The number is 833-877-8255. That's our call-in number. You can text us at that number as well. So Dr. Alberto Chavez Vasquez, endocrinologist at the University Health Texas Diabetes Institute. So Mike texted about people not taking vaccines seriously. If a person has diabetes, what should they be thinking about the vaccine?
Well, this is every patient that we see with diabetes here in our clinics are definitely strongly encouraged to get vaccinated, because I don't think it's they should not, you know, take a chance of contracting the disease. I mean, it's patients with diabetes are just diabetes and COVID is just a bad combination. You know, people don't do well when they get this infection, even if they don't make it to the hospital, you know, they have a more severe form of the disease. So we always recommend the patients to definitely consider getting vaccinated.
When you get vaccinated, I mean, you are going to feel pretty lousy the next day. And so some people might think, well, I'm diabetic, and so I'm probably going to feel really lousy the next day if I get the vaccine, Dr. Chavez. So what do you tell them?
You know, I think the risk of the possibility, the chances of having a side effect for vaccinations are way, way lower compared to the benefit that they get from protecting from having the disease. So I think this it's a matter of choice. The fact is that we hear a lot of, you know, side effects and everything, but in reality, the side effects are rare. You know, most people, they just do well with the vaccination. And the data is out there. I mean, I think the data is very, very strong regarding, you know, the protection that can give you. And if you see the devastating effects of the disease, you know, I think there's it should be an easy choice. You know?
I have a voicemail about that. Let's listen.
Hi, yes. This is Monique from San Antonio, Texas. I was diagnosed with diabetes when I was 19. I'm in my 30s now, and I am not overweight. It really is difficult to see friends and family eat the way they do and have to carb count and watch everything that I eat. I am currently on insulin now, as I've been diabetic for so long. If I do too much insulin, my sugars can drop up to 200 to 300 points within a night. I'm on metformin as well. Just like a handful of tortilla chips can shoot my sugars up 200 points plus. And it's very difficult. I also had a question in regards to COVID and diabetes. I am fully vaccinated, and I was hoping someone could answer whether people like me with diabetes would qualify for a official booster shot of the vaccination soon, as we are in more at-risk category.
Dr. Chavez, there seems to be some misleading information out there about the booster and if you're a diabetic and if you qualify for the booster now.
Yeah, so definitely this is should be taken on an individualized basis. And of course, the recommendations for the booster shots, the ones that are being given today, and of course, they call specifically for patients with, you know, with history of cancer, immunosuppression, patients with transplants. And but of course, you know, we can always definitely make the case. Patients with diabetes are, diabetes is a chronic inflammatory disease. The elevation of, you know, inflammatory factors are always there. So diabetes, especially when it's uncontrolled, it can definitely affect the immune response. There's a decrease in the response from the cells that are fighting infections. So this definitely would be reasonable. Now, if we go by the guidelines, it's not completely clear. I think in individualized cases, this is a point that should be made. But in any case, coming September, a greater amount of the population is going to be eligible for this booster. But yeah, definitely diabetes is a high risk factor. It compromises the immune function, the immune response to infections.
Let's go to the phone lines, and we have Thomas. And Thomas, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. So I've had type 2 diabetes for at least 8 years that I know of. I could have had it before then. But my biggest thing is when you tell people diet, that's a negative sound to them. It's not diet. It's just what you have to eat in order to deal with your disease. So I started doing exercise and watch what I eat. And I went from being sedentary, playing video games, to doing ultramarathons, triathlons, and all sorts of other outdoor activities. I love the Greenway. If you can get out and do something, I mean, it's 30 minutes a day, like they say, makes such a big difference. I only took my medication for about 2 weeks, because within that 2 weeks, I got up, I got outside, I started walking. I did it 2 or 3 times a day, in the morning, in the evening, and I work full time. It's not that you can't do it. It's whether you want to do it and you have to. And you have to think, I want to live. That's all there is to it.
So, Thomas, before you go, do you mind telling me how old you are?
I am 52. I got diabetes. I was diagnosed when I was 45. I went straight from a couch to a full marathon.
And what level of education?
I've some college.
Do you have a good support system, good family helping you?
My wife just passed away. Two years ago with lupus, where she was sedentary, she was bedridden. My daughters do help. They were all supportive, but my daughters are overweight. I can't get them to understand the lifestyle change, family is all diabetics, just about 80%. So it's not like it's in our culture, it's in our minds, and then it's in your will to want to do it. If you want to do it and you want to survive and you don't want to lose the limbs, you're going to get out there and do it. That's basically what it is.
It's a simple message, but it's really, really hard to communicate. But I do appreciate you calling in, and congratulations, and I'm sorry about the loss of your wife. Golaray Aga, Thomas told us originally that he didn't know. He may have had a while where he was undiagnosed as diabetic. How bad is the undiagnosed diabetic situation in San Antonio?
So we do have data on, percentage of prediabetes based on some of the surveys that give us the prevalence of diabetes. And it's a sizable proportion. I don't have the exact number right now, but there is a lot of people, particularly because San Antonio has a lot of the risk factors, such as obesity. There is a sizable proportion that has prediabetes, and they just, haven't been diagnosed yet. And again, that goes back to what we talked about access to healthcare, right? And seeking health and, having health insurance to, when you're at risk to engage, with the healthcare system to be able to catch that when it happens. So yes, prediabetes is definitely prevalent, and it's a problem as well.
Also, Golaray, we had the caller talking about he was using the running trails, the greenways here in San Antonio. Having that type of infrastructure, it seemed really popular. They're really crowded. People are using these facilities as much as they can. Having these and these investments, they do seem to pay off for people's health.
Absolutely. And again, we talked about the fact that COVID has limited us because, we're trying to stay away from gyms or, crowded indoor spaces. And, our sort of solution has been to get outdoors, and I do realize that sometimes, we have the heat to think about for several months of the year, but we really need to make use of the beautiful sunny weather and the greenways and the walkways and the hiking trails that we have available here in San Antonio and sort of the Texas Hill Country. So I really, salute that caller. I think everybody's experience is different. Some people deal with, their diabetes better than others. Some people have, you know, more options and resources, but whatever you can do, get out there, try to engage in a balanced lifestyle, limit your soda intake. We didn't talk about soda intake, but that's a huge risk factor, David, for diabetes, especially for the young. So do what you can to engage in a balanced lifestyle to prevent your prediabetes, to develop in diabetes, or to, you know, eliminate your risk factor for diabetes, or to manage your diabetes if you have it.
All right, I have about a minute here before I go to break, but Dr. Chavez, going from the couch to the marathon, if a person is diabetic, they should check with a doctor first, or how do they do that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to that's a very powerful story that we just hear from Thomas, and this is exactly how it works. But yes, it's always very, very good to get checked before you go from being completely sedentary to a full physical activity. But, you know, for most people who are relatively healthy otherwise, I think this is doable as long as it's done progressively. But definitely a checkup is not kind of unreasonable, of course.
Yeah, I mean, and with the COVID, the pandemic, and the 5Ks, I missed the 5Ks and other running events. It's just, it's, you know, we've having to adjust and figure out how am I going to maintain a healthy lifestyle. It's not easy. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, Diabetes and COVID-19. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Diabetes and COVID-19, what happens when you put them together? It is not good. It is bad. We're talking about that this afternoon. I've got a question, a comment, 833-TPR-TALK. So Dr. Chavez, I want to emphasize this one particular point that I've read, and you tell me if it's right or wrong or what to do with this information. If a person is diabetic and if they have managed their diabetes well and then they get COVID-19, then the chances of getting seriously ill from COVID-19, like other viral infections, it improves. If you manage your diabetes well, you're going to be better off if you get COVID. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. So, and actually, we're seeing this all the time. You know, patients who are well controlled, who are managing most of the risk factors associated to diabetes, they do well. They do in general well. So those patients who are either undiagnosed that were diabetics and they never knew it, and then they just go very ill to the hospital, they find that they were diabetics for how long. And those patients who are particularly very uncontrolled are the ones that have, unfortunately, the worst outcomes. Yes, that's absolutely true.
Something that we should really highlight that. So if you're diabetic, really take care of yourself right now. It's critically important.
Yes, we always stress to the patient, if this is a time to make changes, durable changes, significant changes, this is now, because we are living a pandemic, and it's taking a big toll in the population with diabetes.
And Golaray Aga, San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, is that message getting out there? Is it penetrating all the crazy information that's out there now?
Well, we're definitely trying at Metro Health. In our strategic growth plan, we're really expanding our diabetes prevention efforts. We're expanding a lot of our initiatives, like the Healthy Corner Store initiatives. We're increasing the number of Healthy Corner Stores in San Antonio. We're definitely getting the message out there. And I think it's not getting lost, because there's a lot more attention on these underlying conditions now. So, you know, we're finally having the point made. People are taking it more seriously because of the added risk of COVID, you know, when you have underlying conditions.
Let's go to the phones with Kamala. And Kamala, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling from District 5, where we have high levels of diabetes as well as COVID. And at the same time, a lack of services, of vaccines, except for the nonprofits working here, we just don't hear about anything a lot of the time. And all at the same time, behind those higher levels, there's also attacks on our communities from a lot of city aspects of the city. So I'm wondering, can San Antonio address what I'm seeing as sort of geographic inequities? And of course, this also east and south side too, in other pockets. but these places, can we address these inequities vis-a-vis COVID and diabetes and start to work, you know, sort of more complexly to get the information out to people specific to our neighborhood, you know, because I know we're high. Are we high with Delta too? I don't know. I don't know how much it's spreading here. We never hear that. And we only hear on the radio or a lot of it is on computer. And so people without that don't have access. And okay. We need to get out in the community. I'm just wondering how.
Kamala, thank you for the call. Gola Ray, do we know the prevalence of Delta here in San Antonio?
So again, I don't have that information. That comes from our COVID response team, and that requires genetic sequencing. So I don't believe we have that information right now. But Kamala does make a good point that we do have a lot of online resources. We routinely map vaccination rates, COVID infection rates by zip code and by council district. And we do have a lot of targeted efforts in the city where we try to do a lot of reach out and engagement in places that are particularly affected. So for example, our vaccine pop-up clinics, our testing centers, we can always continue to try to do a better job and, you know, have more on the ground boots because a lot of these resources are online, like Kamala said, and we have to think more about the people who don't have, you know, access to digital resources.
But also in areas that are low income typically have higher urban heat islands, and it can be actually hotter in these areas where there's fewer trees, less green environments than other parts of the city. 5-10 degrees sometimes. And that makes it more difficult for people to get out and exercise, Gola Ray. We have this built environment that is discriminatory.
Absolutely. It's really important because all of these factors come together. You know, when you don't have access to green spaces or, you know, safe neighborhoods where there isn't a lot of crime, a lot of people, who, you know, with lower socioeconomic status or who live in, you know, high-risk zip codes or areas do not have the neighborhood setting to be able to engage in these activities. And again, through a lot of our initiatives in the city, we are slowly starting to address all of those things, including the built environment and making our neighborhoods a safer and better place to get out there, to get fresh air, and to exercise.
Let's go to Ted. And Ted, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good day. I just wanted to remind your listeners that a reason why people have access to care problems is because the state of Texas, that is the legislature and the governor, have refused to expand Medicaid, notwithstanding that it would be good for people and good for the state financially. So the only way we're going to get that change, since they seem resistant to advocacy, is by throwing out the legislators that refuse to do that.
Ted, thank you for the call. Appreciate that message. Let's go straight to Chris since we're running out on time. Hey, Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I was wanting to talk about how we treat healthcare as a commodity, even though it's an essential part of staying alive. Like seeing it, you need to see a doctor to make sure that you're not getting any issues with your health or anything. But it can be so expensive for people, and we need to really change our focus about how we think about it. Like during the last election, there was M4A, there was UBI, there was all these talks of putting through these programs that may sound some people like socialism or something like that, but they benefit everyone in that anyone who is rural, anyone who is urban, suburban, anyone can go to the doctor without having to worry about that cost on the back end. Because dialysis and a lot of different things that deal with the health issues can be very expensive for people, and it can be just where people can't just afford to do them for their own health, and then it cycles down into worse issues.
All right, Chris, thank you for the call. Dr. Chavez, we've heard earlier Thomas talking about running marathons and ultramarathons. Few people can do that. What is a recommended amount of exercise that a person who has been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, what should they be doing?
Yeah, ideally a patient with diabetes should be exercising at least 30 minutes most days of the week. And of course, we have to take into account there are patients that are not nowhere close to that goal. But this has to be a transition, you know, and this has to be started with small amounts of exercise, and the goal should be to work towards 30 minutes of physical activity per day. And there's some data there, and actually people may benefit from doing 30 to 60 minutes, you know, per day, particularly people with
diabetes. When you say exercise, do you mean like elevated heart rate, you know, really, you know, doing a great amount of work, can I just be walking?
No, especially with patients who have, you know, problems, you know, amputations, and running marathons is not necessarily an option. And, you know, of course, a resistance exercise. There are several forms of exercise that it doesn't have to be all cardio. It has to be a combination of both, you know, water exercises, stretch exercises. So the key is the muscles are the ones that actually that process the glucose. So anything that makes a patient, you know, put the muscles into play is going to actually help to lower the inflammation and to lower the blood glucose levels. That's really the bottom line.
So get out and work, get out and do some gardening, get out and walk. That would do it.
Yes, exactly. You just walk the dog, you know, go outside, you know, do some gardening, you know, water the plants. Anything that actually gets the body moving is going to help to control the blood glucose levels.
And Gulare Aga, do we know that doing that type of activity, how does that impact stress levels, and how is that connected to diabetes?
Again, the link between diabetes and mental health issues and depression is very clear. So that's a really good spot on point to make. It kills two birds with one stone. Getting out there, getting some exercise, getting out there, you know, in the fresh air, it absolutely helps with your diabetes in a physical sense, as well as mental health and your stress levels, which again, work together as well. So it's almost like a triangular, you know, trifecta of care, basically.
What about that you are taking action, you are taking control, you are a person with agency, and now you are doing something positive about this condition, which doesn't have to be as bad as it can be. So here you are, you did lace up, you did go outside, you did do a little walking, you worked up a little sweat because it's humid as heck, but here you are, you're doing it, and you can build from there, Gulare.
Absolutely. These points are great. And believe it or not, there's actually academic level research, you know, robust research that shows an association between things like sense of purpose and cardiovascular risk. Actually having a sense of purpose, you know, having an agency over your health or your life can actually create physical effects in your body and reduce your risks, you know, for cardiovascular disease. So those things are really great to think about. Self-efficacy, sense of purpose, sense of control, that has a clear mind-body, you know, effect as well.
So we don't have to be fatalistic when it comes to diabetes, COVID-19. We can do things to wear masks up, get vaccinated, do everything we can to take care of ourselves and our loved ones, and we can get through this. I want to thank both of our guests, Gulare Aga, PhD, chronic disease epidemiologist, chief of informatics, San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, and Dr. Alberto Chavez Vasquez, endocrinologist at the University Health Texas Diabetes Institute. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chan. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.